Seltzly Podcast Network, in conjunction with Protectors of the Book, presents Quest for Truth, seeking the truth about God, faith, and the Bible. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Keith. It's time for Quest for Truth, episode 182. I am alone today in Church House Studios. And what I have actually done is I've read a Bible study, or not a Bible study, a devotional course. It was a pretty short one. The title of the course was Hope in the Dark. And the various, I think it was five or seven chapters in it, I mean daily readings. And the first one deals with some information from Habakkuk and some other passages. And I thought what I would do is I recorded my own thoughts that went through my mind as I read the readings. And I thought I would gather some other sources. And as it turns out, Nathan Caldwell will be contributing to part of it, because he did a series not long ago, or I guess it's been some time ago. He's still doing it on Psalms. And I wanted to get his ideas on this particular passage. And I follow J. Vernon McGee, who is a old-timey radio Bible teacher. He was a preacher, I think, from the 30s into the 60s. And then in the late 60s, early 70s, he had a radio broadcast, which is where I borrowed these audio clips from. They're freely available on the internet through the Bible podcast. Excuse me. And he, of course, now has gone on to be with the Lord. He passed away of cancer, I'm pretty sure, in the early 80s, late 70s. But he has some good things to say in his Through the Bible course, which is out there, that's still, to this day, being broadcast all over the world. It's still a very active ministry. But I wanted to just add more to it than just my own ideas. And I think between the few meager ideas I had on it, and between Nathan and the now deceased J. Vernon McGee, that I think it comes out to be kind of a short podcast. So I thought I would have DJ Cali Retrobot help out.
That's me.
And maybe present a couple of songs, at least a couple, and then maybe we'll wrap up the show with one final one before we closed out with our closing thoughts and things like that. Why don't you take it away there, Miss Callie, and
ready when you are.
Then we'll just turn to and roll the clip that I have pre-recorded for this devotional installment. I hope you enjoy, and stay tuned. I'll see you all back maybe in about half an hour. Enjoy. And as I say on my other podcast, take it away, Retrobots.
Thanks, Keith. Here's a song that was very popular in 1948, and comes to us through the talents of the Jubilaires, as they sing, The Three Children.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Three children from the land of Israel,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego,
took a little trip to the land of Babylon,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
He took a heap of gold and he made him an idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
Now we told everybody when you hear the music of the cornet.
Oh yeah.
And we told everybody when you hear the music of the flute.
Oh, good Lord, said you got to bow down and worship the idol,
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
But the children of Israel would not bow down.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
You couldn't fool them with a golden idol.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
So the king put the children in the fiery furnace.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
And he heaped on coal and red-hot brimstone.
You
made it seven times hotter than it ought to be. Even burn up the soldiers the king had put there.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Oh, Shadrach, Meshach,
Abednego. And the Lord called Gabriel and gave him a couple of wings. Well, he came on down into the middle of the furnace, began to cool the flames. Them children got so happy, they went strutting right through the fire, just laughing and talking about the power of the gospel.
Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Oh, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego.
That old Nebuchadnezzar said, here now, he saw the power of the Lord.
And they had a big time in the land of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Oh, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
And of course, that was recorded live, right from the days of old-time radio. Next up, we move into our modern times, and thanks to Kathy Adkins, we have permission to include her song, To Me, He Has Become Everything.
They can take the Ten Commandments off the courthouse walls. They can even take all the manger scenes out of the parks and malls. They can take my blessed Bible, tear the pages all apart. But they'll never take my Jesus out of my heart. They can take away a right to pray, throw us all in jail, but they can't take away the life he gave. Send my soul to hell. Yeah, they can take my blessed Bible, tear the pages all apart, but they'll never take my Jesus out of my heart. They can take away our liberty, God's holy word. They can make it be against the law if we witness door to door. Oh, they can stop our voice from preaching in the streets, oh, and even in the park. But they'll never take my Jesus out of my heart. Oh, they can take away our right to pray, throw us all in jail, but they can't take
Yeah, they can take my blessed Bible, tear the pages all apart, but they'll never take my Jesus out of my heart. No, they can take my life and bury me in a grave so cold and dark, but they'll never take my Jesus.
And now for our featured presentation.
Based on Habakkuk 1:1-4, talking about having a dark time, or actually trying to have a hope during a dark day. And for Habakkuk's day, well, it's hard to pin down. Some scholars don't really agree on when exactly he lived and wrote his few chapters that he managed to put pen and ink to. Through much deliberation, I'll save you pages and pages of reading and long minutes spent digging through what scholars and commentators have said. But through picking out what they call historical criticism, which means they look at the events he writes about and compares it to other writers today, and literary criticism, the words he uses and how he phrases things, they believe that Habakkuk wrote his first two chapters during the time when the kings were transitioning from the good king Josiah into the days of the evil king of Jehoiakim, and they kind of sets a tone that we can even ask these same kind of questions about today. He lived in a time where you had this good king and things were going in a godly way, and the law and the Bible was all chugging along like it should. And suddenly something happens, and the king of Egypt, I forget the circumstances, managed to lure out Josiah, and Josiah was killed. And the Egyptian king installed his own little puppet king, which happened to be Josiah's son, Jehoiakim. And he was not a good king. So you had this time period where Habakkuk wrote these first couple chapters where he didn't get it. Everything is going good. They were living right, living, following God, doing what the law says. And suddenly you have this evil things happening, toppling their government, toppling their religious morals and ethics. And he asks some questions. And if you can relate to some kind of days where it just makes you ask, where are you, Lord? Then you'll know what Habakkuk is talking about. And by the way, Habakkuk, I've heard it from old-time radio commentator J. Vernon McGee, I'm pretty sure. He says that...
Hold on a minute, Keith. I actually have that clip from Dr. McGee. Here you go.
Now, his name means love's embrace. And did you know that that's about all we know about Habakkuk? Martin Luther... He gave a very striking definition of the name Habakkuk, which means love's embrace. And I'd like for you to hear this. Habakkuk signifies an embracer, or one who embraces another, takes him into his arms. He embraces his people and takes them in his arms. That is, he comforts them and holds them up as one embraces a weeping child to quiet it with the assurance that if God wills, it shall soon be better. It's a very wonderful quotation, by the way, and reveals something also of the heart of Martin Luther.
Back to you, Keith.
So, take it as you will. But in Habakkuk 1, he just introduces himself. This is Habakkuk the prophet.
Keith, I can share more excerpts from J. Vernon McGee. Here's his quick introduction and reading of verse 1.
Let's look at Habakkuk, the man with problems. And we'll begin with verse 1 now of chapter 1. And I'm reading, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. Now, it's the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. Now, the burden here means, actually, the judgment. This is the judgment which Habakkuk the prophet did see. And it's not so much the question that he asks here, but rather it's the Lord's answer. And the Lord's answer is really the prophecy. And it is the burden, and it is the judgment. And that is the way that it fits into the picture.
How's that?
And he gets into chapter or verse 2, where he uses the words like, you know, he's begging the Lord, listen to him. He's begging for help from the Lord. How long will he have to do these things? Because he's being confronted with violence and injustice, crime and cruelty. And if you just read the verses at face value, it almost makes it sound like that there's internal bad things happening within the nation, within the people.
How about we turn to Dr. McGee again to hear his take on the matter?
Now, let me read verse 2. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear, even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save? Now, he is telling the Lord, actually, that God is refusing to answer his prayer. He cries out in a night of despair as he sees violence, and that God is doing nothing about it, and apparently he's saying nothing. This is the elegy of Habakkuk. And it will conclude, however, the book with praise with a note of joy. But if you have a question, my feeling is that you ought to take it to the Lord as this man did. And you'll get an answer from God if you're sincere in the question that you take to him.
Back to you, Keith.
And that may be, but it only had happened at the time Jehoiakim would have taken over. It may have been there under the surface before, but he's not calling out, I don't think, because this has been a big old long slow ramp up. I think he's calling out because things were good, God, and why did you let this good king topple, or a good nation and or a good worship topple? And be overthrown by these evil people. Now, once the evil people got in, yeah, certainly there would have been corruption. And I think he's just saying, we were doing okay, and how long is this evilness going to be happening? Because the law had become, in effect, I think he uses the word paralyzed in the English Standard Version. It made it a mockery of justice. Honest people became losers at the hands of the evil people. I want to keep my comments short, but if any of these things describe what you feel about things happening in your life, whether it be world politics, worldview, something personal, you're in a relationship or you're in a marriage or you have health issues that you're just asking yourself, everything was going great, and now suddenly I have this. What's going wrong? What's happening, God? Why would you let this evil thing stagnate or topple or otherwise overthrow all my good stuff I've been doing?
Keith, I hate to break in on you again, but I think we ought to hear a few more excerpts from Dr. McGee. Here's his take on verses 3 and 4.
Now, look at this specific question of Habakkuk, how it fitted into the local situation of his day. People were getting by with sin. God was doing nothing. At least Habakkuk thought he was doing nothing. And his question is, why doesn't God do something about sin? Why doesn't God judge the wicked? Why does God permit evil men and women to prosper? And isn't that a good question? Isn't that a question that you would ask today? I'm sure that many of God's people have said, why doesn't God move today? Why does he permit all this evil in our nation? Why does he permit the rich to get by with it? And why is it that the average person is having to bear such a burden? The average person pays the taxes. The average person is the one that when gasoline either went up or rationed or whatever happens, who pays for it? The rich don't pay. I mean, they pay, but they had it to pay. And they never suffered in World War II. Why doesn't God do something about it? Isn't that your question? May I say to you, that was David's question. Fact of the matter is, it almost robbed David of his faith. David said this in Psalm 73:2, "But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked." Well, David said, I looked around me, and who is it that's prospering? It's the wicked. Why doesn't God do something about it? And that was the question of Habakkuk. Now God says, I'm not letting you get by with sin. You think I'm doing nothing? Well, I'm preparing a nation down yonder on the banks of the Euphrates River. And when the appointed time comes and my people don't turn to me, I'm going to turn the Babylonians loose. And they came, and the record of their destruction of Jerusalem is something that was fierce and terrible. And it was almost unspeakable, the things that they did when they took these people captive. That's really raised a question for this man, Habakkuk. If you think he had a question before, he's really got a question now. And he says, my people have been engaging in violence, but they haven't seen anything yet. And you remember the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes says, because judgment against that which is evil is not executed speedily, the heart of the sons of men is in them to do evil. You see, the first time they did evil, they wondered, maybe lightning would strike them and that sort of thing. I remember the first time as a boy that I swiped watermelons. It was in the summertime and a storm was coming up. And time I pulled off a watermelon and started to the fence with it, there was a flash of lightning and a clap of thunder, the like of which that you can only have in southern Oklahoma. And I want to tell you, I thought the Lord is judging me right there for what I'd done. But the day came that I discovered that wasn't judgment from God, and I could do that sort of thing with no fear whatsoever. And that's what had happened in the nation Israel. I think the first time that they broke the Ten Commandments, they shuddered. They wondered if judgment wouldn't come immediately and fire wouldn't come down. But you see, because execution against an evil work isn't performed speedily, the hearts of the sons of man, it's in them to do evil. And it causes them to go on and on into sin. And we're living in a day when the average person does not believe in the judgment of God. They're like Habakkuk was. Habakkuk says, I prayed that you'll do something about my nation. They're in sin, and they get worse and worse, and It's flagrant now. It's out in the open. And there's evil, there's violence, there's gross immorality, and God's doing nothing about it. Well, don't you feel that way today about the way conditions are? Is God doing anything about it today? Doesn't look that way, does it? Why, it even caused a group of theologians up in New England to come up with the idea, which is not new, of course, that God is dead, that he's not around. And they actually mean there'd never been a God, and there is no God. That's what they were trying to say. Why? Because he's not interfering in the affairs of man. But isn't he interfering in the affairs of men? Isn't God overruling today? Isn't he moving? He permitted us to go through a time of affluence, and people got careless, even God's people got careless. Now we are wondering whether we're going to exist, or how much longer we're going to exist as a nation. The question is asked, is God doing anything about evil? God says, I am. May I say to you, friends, is God doing nothing today? Well, I rather think he is. And I think it would frighten you and me right now if you and I really knew how much he is doing about it. God says, you know, Habakkuk, when I tell you what I'm really doing, it's going to be difficult for you to believe it, because instead of doing nothing, I'm doing a great deal. Fact of the matter is, finally, Habakkuk is going to ask God not to move so fast when he finds out how fast he is moving and how many things he's doing. And so God says to him, I want you to know that among the nations I move. And in spite of all the lawlessness and the war and the sin in all the nations, God says, I'm overruling. I'm moving. And I'm moving in judgment. How is he going to do it? Now, God's going to give him the answer here. God's doing something about it, and actually, it's going to raise a bigger question for Habakkuk, but he sure found out God was doing something.
What else do you have for us, Big Guy?
I kind of think that Psalms 6 goes nicely with this, and what I have is I have some comments from Nathan Caldwell, where he did a podcast on this some time ago, and I wanted to have him speak those words he did when he recorded this at this time, something like, well, 2 years ago, I think, is when he posted this on his podcast feed. But he nails it really well. So here we go.
Oh, is Nathan going to be on the show today?
No.
David, don't tell me you're going to sabotage his phone call again.
He's not calling.
But Keith just said.
He said that Nathan had comments.
Right. So when is he supposed to call?
How about 2 years ago?
What? 2 years? What are you talking about?
Nathan recorded some comments on the Psalms on his Protectors of the Book feed.
Okay. Like the ones that Keith helped out with not long ago.
Right. And Keith asked if he could use the episode where Nathan talked about Psalm 6.
Okay. What do we need to do then?
Just press that button.
Oh no, not me. You probably have it booby-trapped.
Just hit the button. We don't have all day.
Yeah, right. What's going to happen? Fireworks will shoot out of the controls.
No, just hit the button.
An ejection seat will shoot Keith out of the studio.
No, wait. That's a good idea. But no, not today. Just hit the... Oh, never mind. I'll do it.
Here we are again. With Psalm 6. Not a lot here, but I wanted to share what I had so far. So we start in Psalm 6, verse 1. O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. You know, a wise person admits that he is not perfect, especially when it comes to his sin nature. A wise person admits that he is faulty. Verse 3 and 4. My soul is also sore vexed, but thou, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver my soul, O save me for thy mercy's sake. Now, I've heard, or read rather, a different commentary on this, but this looks to me to be a prayer of repentance and mercy, asking for mercy after repenting. And there may be other opinions on this, and that's fine. You need to study it and determine for yourself what the writer's intent was and what you may get out of it. Verse 5 says, in death there's no remembrance of you. In the grave who will give you thanks? I am weary with my groaning all the night. Make I my bed to swim. I water the couch with my tears. What's he saying? He's saying there's all this stuff is going on. And it's just one endless sorrow after another. He's asking God, mercy, mercy. His eye, in verse 7 it says, my eye is consumed because of grief. It waxes old because of all mine enemies. Verse 8. Depart from me, all workers of iniquity, for the Lord hath heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord has heard my supplication. The Lord will receive my prayer. Let all my enemies be ashamed and sore vexed. Let them return and be ashamed suddenly. You know, in times past, and he could still use it today, God chooses the methods he will use. Sometimes in times past, he used enemies of his children to chasten his children. When his kids repented and returned to God, the enemies would start to lose again. This could still go on nowadays. I can see where it might. Where something is happening that is wrong because of something we've done. Is that always the case? No. But is it sometimes the case? I can see where it could be. The main thing is that I want us to get out of this is sometimes we go off on our own little path when God has a different path for us. Sin takes over by our choice and we have to be punished by God. Yet God still will hear a repentant prayer. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you. And I don't have anything else to add to that. I know that in your comments, you were presenting that before a broad audience, to the unrepentant, to those who maybe did have evil in their lives. And they do have a need to recognize that and repent and cling to the hope that living right will be rewarded. But I also want to just underscore again for those who maybe have been living rightly and you have these things happening. Sometimes God has a bigger, broader picture, and it's a picture that we don't always see. We don't have access to in our short lifespan. And what looks bad to us may be part of his bigger, good plan. It's hard to grasp. And trust me, I know there's things happening in everyone's life, including my own, where it just feels like, how long is this going to stretch out? How long is this going to last? But if you look at Matthew 7, verses 7, 8.
Keith, how about if I just read that for you? Matthew 7, 7 asks, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. 8, for everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened. English Standard Version.
And this kind of touches what Nathan was saying on his comments. Is if you are in a repentant state, and really examine your life, be honest. When bad things are happening, ask yourself, is there something I'm doing? Because maybe it is. Maybe it is. And it's better to metaphorically cut that part out of your life. Repent of it, cast it away. And it's better to enter heaven without that thing, that relationship, that attitude, that whatever. because that cause of sin is going to get you in trouble, and there's no good way to get around that. But I do want to wrap this up by looking at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, which basically states, "But without faith, no one can please God. We must believe God is real and that he rewards everyone who searches for him." Now, that's from the Contemporary English Version, the CEV. And we just have to cling to that hope that no matter how bad things are looking, how flat our life is, how stagnant, how bad the enemies are encircling us, or how bad it looks like evil people are winning and the good people are losing, if we cling to the hope that God's promises are real, we just have to believe that God does reward, in the big picture, everyone who searches. So keep on searching, keep on questing for truth. And that is my devotional thought for the day.
Okay, and that was the show. And I hope that, for those out there who are going through some darkness in your life, that there is still hope. And one thing about having dark times is there are times, like with Habakkuk, where he had trouble seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And as alluded to by Dr. McGee, when God did answer him, it shows up in a passage that follows right after this. And God was saying, it's going to get darker before it gets better. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And in fact, in Habakkuk's case, he probably was of an age where he wasn't going to live long enough to see it get better. It would take the next generation. But even if God's goodness stretches beyond our meager, short lifetimes, he is in control, and he is in charge. And all we can do is live the best life we can, even through those dark times. God doesn't always take them away, but he does help us get through them and deal with life's challenges. Oh, so with that, I guess it's time to wrap it up. And we'll play a tune by, of all people, and these songs are, of course, open source, from the world of old time radio. This one coming up is from Hank Williams, not known to be a Christian, but he was known to include gospel songs in his repertoire. And I think this is one he wrote himself. It's called "How Could You Refuse Him Now?" Oh, and by the way, Kathy Adkins, she does allow us to use her music. And so there'll be links to her webpage, how to contact her in case you want to have her come and play at your church or activities or events. So here we go. Take it away, Hank Williams.
How can you refuse him now? How can you refuse him now? How can you turn away from his side? With tears in his eyes, on the cross there he died. How can you There's a story, that has often been told, of how our Savior died. As they nailed his hands, he cried, "They don't understand." As the blood flowed from his side. So how can you refuse him now? How can you refuse him now? How can you turn away?
side, with tears in his eyes, on the cross there he died. How can you refuse Jesus now?
All right, closing thoughts. Closing thoughts. What do we have for closing thoughts? God knows how to take your ordinary and make it something extraordinary.
That was a nice thought.
Whatever. Now it's my turn.
Okay, your turn?
Yeah, and this is more than a closing thought. It's a public service announcement for our listeners.
All right, what do you got for us?
Fun things to do in public. Go to PetSmart and buy birdseed. Ask how long it will take for the birds to grow.
Okay.
Here's mine.
And?
You can never make the same mistake twice, because the second time it's not a mistake, it's a choice.
All right, well, I guess that's it. So, with that said and done, it's time to sign off. So this is your host, Keith, signing off. Until next week. I hope that you enjoyed the show. Please tell a friend about us. That's how the word spreads more than anything, probably. And with that said, see you next week.
Contact Keith at podcast.helpfully.net. That's helpfully.net. While you're there, you can send mail through the contact page, comment on any of these show notes, or just email me directly, keith@helpfully.net. We now have voicemail, area code 401-753-4844. Nathan Caldwell can be contacted through Protectors of the Book. Everything he does can be found at facebook.com/Protectors of the Book. That's Protectors of the Book. Music in the show is provided by Kerry Livgren under the Creative Commons license as Freely Received, Freely Given, and is found as part of a collection of Theophilus Bible software. We hope you find everything you need, and if you don't know Jesus, your greatest need is a Savior. Thanks for listening.